Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Fiction. Science fiction. Horror. Fantasy. Crime. LGBT. Thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCB 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
Well, we have a talk show host, a professional and a favorite from a lot of people. He fills in on Coast to Coast, which everybody pretty much knows that show. I don't need to talk about it. And he also does The Conspiracy Show, and he's out of Toronto. Richard Syrett, thank you for being here.
Al, my pleasure, and thank you as well, Julie.
Thank you.
So, Richard, a lot of people probably don't know. How did you get into doing The Conspiracy Show and paranormal shows like Coast to Coast? Like, was there some event that happened to you that made you just want to follow through with this kind of a career in your life?
Well, at the time, this was in the late 90s, I was working at CFRB, a heritage station in Toronto that has been on the air since 1927. So what, over 90 years. And at that time, I was producing. So I was behind the scenes, and I was working with some of the legends in talk radio. So I got to learn from the very best. And then in the late 90s, the program director asked me if I'd like to step behind the microphone and do my own show. At that time, they were really, really good at promoting talent from within. And so they would typically give someone like me a late night show overnights on the weekend when and where we can do the least amount of damage. So I was, my first show in radio was, in the late 90s, Sunday nights at 11, and it didn't start out as a conspiracy or a paranormal talk show. I was just talking about my life and just sort of the human condition, things that I thought were sort of relevant to everyone in their everyday lives, not a hard political show or anything like that, just life. And slowly, the paranormal aspects kind of creeped into the show. At that time, we subscribed to a service called the Wireless Flash, and it was a great prep tool for talk show hosts. And there were little interviews and with the contact number of the guest or the publicist. And I think the very first interview I did in this arena was on the Loch Ness Monster. So there was someone who was looking for Nessie, a hunter. I suppose, not a hunter, but someone who was hunting for Loch Ness, the Loch Ness Monster. So that was the first one I did, and it got such a terrific response, I started introducing more and more of that into the show until I would say by 1999, it had virtually taken over. and it became exclusively about cryptozoology and the paranormal. And then, of course, 9/11 happened, and that changed everything for everyone. And that obviously took began to dominate what the program was all about. So that's basically sort of the trajectory of how the show kind of took off. And then I hadn't really thought about it for many years, but I had had my own paranormal experience in the mid 1980s. It was 1986, 87, actually, just after my father died. And I don't know if you want me to go into that now, but that, upon reflection, that sort of would inform, that informed my, I guess, my entree into the paranormal. But it's funny, it had happened, it was traumatic at the time, and then it was completely, not completely, but somewhat forgotten, perhaps suppressed. And then all of a sudden I realized, hey, wait a minute, something like this has happened to me. And so I think about it a lot more than I used to, but it's been over 30 years since I've had that experience. And then subsequently to that, just a few years ago, I had another paranormal experience. Well, possibly. I'm always skeptical. I mean, there's always a prosaic explanation, which I'm upfront about. I have to be kind of careful. It's not 100% that I had a paranormal experience, but something strange may have happened. Let's put it that way. It involved a possible telephone call from my late radio partner after he died.
Ooh.
Oh. So when you were growing up, I'm going to come back to that point, Richard, because it's fascinating. But when you were growing up, what was the belief system in the house? What was kind of your values and your beliefs in respect of the paranormal? And
well, as a young lad, we were Methodist, or the United Church. I was raised in the United Church, which used to be the Methodist Church. And I went to Sunday school. I went to I sang in the choir. I played in the church hockey league. But as a child, it wasn't, I mean, I wouldn't say I was devout in the sense that I had experiential, I had experience, you know, with the divine. It was simply something that we were expected to do, and I had no objection to it. It installed a wonderful sense of community, attending the church and so forth. But I had no real experience. So I wouldn't say I was a terribly spiritual person, but it certainly laid the groundwork. I mean, I would consider myself now to be somewhat religious. So there was no taboo, really, talking about, you know, ghosts or anything like that. I remember being very fond of a program with Leonard Nimoy called In Search Of, which explored a lot of, mysteries and UFOs and things like that. But I would hardly categorize myself as sort of a hardcore devotee of the paranormal or conspiracies at that age. I'm talking maybe, 12, 13, 14, 15. It wasn't, until my early 20s, I had that first paranormal experience just after my father died. And then, as I said, I sort of suppressed it or forgot about it for quite some time. But to answer your question, no, there was no taboo. My parents were fairly encouraging of us exploring and keeping an open mind and even discussing these things at the dinner table.
That's fantastic, isn't it? Because so often we get shut down very early on into exploring our own beliefs and I suppose researching and finding out more about those things that intrigue us. And when you talk about your father's passing and that event afterwards, what form did that take?
Well, it was a day, I believe, the day that he was buried. He passed away on New Year's Eve, 1986. And that night, I was at home. I was home from winter during winter break from university, and when he passed away. So I was back in my old bedroom in my mother's house in the basement, and I had fallen asleep to the sound of the television in the other room. The rest of the family had gathered at the home. They were watching TV in the adjoining room to my bedroom. And so when I woke up and it was completely dark and completely silent, I realized, oh, it must be very late. The TV's off. Everyone else has gone to bed or gone home. And I was facing the wall. The bed was up against the wall. I was facing the wall. And I just felt this sense that someone or something was in the room. So I turned over in the bed and faced the wall. And there was this specter coming through the door. And it was very, very dark. It was a basement bedroom. Mm-hmm. And it was a very, but I could still make out sort of the shadow, the outline of this figure, and it seemed to be a very fairly short person. And I immediately thought that it was my mother coming through the door, and I called out to her, and there was no response. And the next thing I noticed was that this, I had this sweatshirt that had a University of Victoria insignia on it, and it was somewhat phosphorescent. It kind of glowed in the dark a little bit. And I thought that I made out that sweatshirt, and I was so confused. I was never afraid. I was just confused. And I was wondering, why is my mother wearing my sweatshirt? And the other thing I have to throw out there is that, and again, this is why I offer up this possibility that there's a more prosaic explanation. Customary when someone in the family dies that the doctor will prescribe mild sedatives to everyone in the family. And my mother dutifully, you know, broke off a little piece. I think she gave us maybe a third of a tablet each to help us sleep. So I had taken one of those. So again, I throw that out there that it's possible that that was having some effect. Yeah. And I was thinking that as I'm watching this specter come through the door. Is this the medication? What is going on here? And then it disappeared. I closed my eyes, put my head down, back on my pillow, and then when I opened my eyes, this specter was floating above me, parallel to me. So its face was looking down into my face. And when I looked up into that face, it was me, my doppelganger.
Wow.
And then I immediately, stretched out my arms and kind of made a fanning motion, and it just dissipated. And as if it got sucked into a corner of the room, it just vanished like that. And that was it. And I never mentioned it to anyone until several years later when other members of the family started to mention things that had happened to them. And then I felt, okay, it's safe. I can talk about it now.
Oh, and what did I've you lost think you. When that happened?
What did I think when it happened?
Yeah, what did you think to you? What was the purpose of that, do you think?
Well, again, I was confused by the whole thing, and just because it had happened immediately following my father's funeral, my first thought was he's come back in a form, in a different form, so as not to frighten me. That's what I thought. Mm-hmm. That was just mere speculation on my part. Then now, I began to think about, well, maybe, now what do I think?
I
remain conflicted about it.
Right.
And I don't know that that will ever resolve itself. The other thing that I've read about is that in times of stress, sometimes our doppelganger will appear to us, which is sort of our soul body. Sort of an out-of-body experience. So it's possible, you know, that that was what it was happening. But I remain conflicted about it to this day. I've not reconciled it. I've not sorted it out in my mind, and probably never will.
It's fascinating, isn't it? Because all of the years of hosting that you've done, you've spoken to so many people and heard so many different experiences, and yet for you personally, that is still something that is so unresolved.
Yes, and I, because I am naturally very skeptical, whether it's about conspiracies or the paranormal. I'm not a, I don't say I'm a debunker, but I am skeptical. And these things perhaps are not knowable ultimately.
So from your very early days, when you were your first interview about, you know, in terms of paranormal, with the Loch Ness Monster, a very British thing, what has been the most memorable interview you've had in terms of teaching you something, in terms of something you've taken away from it?
Wow. Now, we have to sort of separate these into the various fields. There's the paranormal, there's cryptozoology, and the conspiracy field. So did you want me to address one of those, or?
So all of them. Tell us, you know, because this is so important for your learning. Your whole development is based on, isn't it, your experiences, who you speak to, what information conflicts with that, how you make sense of it. I think it's fascinating how we develop through the views of others.
Yes. Well, boy, that is a tough question. I mean, there are so many that I've done hundreds and hundreds over the years. So to pick one that stands out, well, I had the great honor and pleasure of getting to know Jim Mars quite well. We probably did about a dozen interviews over the years. Jim Mars, of course, one of the grandfathers of the JFK assassination arena, and many other areas that he's delved into. But I learned a lot from Jim Mars regarding JFK. I remember being down in Dealey Plaza, and I had never been before, so I was just kind of walking around, and the phone, my cell phone rang. And lo and behold, it was Jim, who lived in nearby in Fort Worth, and he proceeded to give me a guided tour of Dealey Plaza while I'm on the phone. And of course, Jim's book Crossfire was one of the books that Oliver Stone sort of worked from and used as the basis of his movie JFK. So to get a guided tour by Jim of Dealey Plaza by Jim Mars was very instructional. The other individual that's been very instructive to me over the years is Rabbi Jonathan Cahn, who's a Messianic Jew. And I mean, this is another area I delve into a fair bit, you know, the Bible and so forth and prophecy. And he never ceases to amaze me. I'm just blown away by the depth and breadth of his knowledge of the Bible.
And what did you take from those particular interviews? So I guess what I'm interested in is the learning that you've taken, how that shaped you as a presenter and in your beliefs.
Well, in terms of Jonathan Cahn, and you know, I'm always upfront on my programs that I'm an Orthodox Christian. I'm a Bible-believing Christian. So I guess the takeaway for me, with Rabbi Cahn is just been very faith affirming. How, you know, prophecy, the Bible is primarily prophecy. I think it's something like 2/3 of the Bible is prophecy, and how much of that has come to fruition. You know, that to me is just stunning. And the way that he lays it out is just stunning. And then with Jim Mars, it's all just there's a saying that if we have seen further, it's because we have stood on the shoulders of giants. And I'm not sure if that's Voltaire. Who is that? Who said that? Anyway, it's an expression that always stays with me. And so for me, when I do these interviews with great researchers and authors and investigators like Jim Mars or John Rappaport from No More Fake News, it's just all great research. It helps prepare me for the next interview. So, you know, I'm not an investigator. I'm not a researcher. I'm a broadcaster. I run my mouth for a living. So I'm reliant upon, you know, the experts and the authors and so forth to make these shows. And so when I have access to great investigators like Jim Mars, that just helps me prepare better for the next interview with someone else. I can reference Jim Mars, or I can reference Rabbi Kahn, or I can reference John Rappaport, or, you know, just a whole panoply of the pantheon, really, of great investigators and researchers in these fields.
And when we interview people, we tend to, I tend to, I'll bring very little in about myself personally. I'll say the odd thing in terms of my mediumship, etc., but very little, really. And I guess when we sometimes you hear people talking and you want to believe them because they believe so adamantly themselves, and it's really hard to do. Has there ever been a belief or, you know, a view that you have listened to and just thought, this is crazy?
Yes, yes. But I always try to provide a safe and respectful platform. Mm. So yeah. I will, where it's appropriate, I'll offer an opinion, or I'll press them a little bit, or you know, challenge them in a gentle and respectful way. But I don't want to turn, I've never wanted to turn these shows into you know, a debate. Because otherwise we, you know, they'd never get out of the starting blocks. You know, I would challenge the whole premise, and then they would never have an opportunity, you know, to tell their side of things. I let the listeners decide for themselves.
Great.
You know, when you're doing a show with a guest, and you're talking about you know, something in the conspiracy field, How do you assess what's real and what's not? I mean, because of late, there's, you know, with the internet and with all this stuff, there's so much information out there, and there's so many conspiracies. Like, it's gone all the way to, you know, Alex Jones typey stuff. So how do you know what you're getting is real?
Ultimately, you don't. And again, that's for the audience to decide what is real and what is not. However, you know, I have to take things sort of on a case by case basis, which is something the mainstream media doesn't do. They conflate, right? So if they're trying to discredit someone, they'll say, well, this person, yes, you know, they're talking about JFK, but they also believe in Bigfoot, so that discredits them. They just group everything together. The moon landing hoax and 9/11 and, you know, just everything but the kitchen sink. So I take it on a case by case basis. And for me personally, when I'm listening to this, I'm listening for evidence rather than just, you know, broad statements like, well, you know, researchers believe this, or researchers say this. Well, what researchers, and what's the data? Ultimately, you have to look at the data. You have to look at the evidence. Now, when we're talking about conspiracies and things that happened 50, 60 years ago, you know, obviously it's very, very difficult to provide the smoking gun document. But if you look at the preponderance of evidence, to me, that's what you're looking at. You know, JFK, for example, there's overwhelming eyewitness testimony, documentation to at least establish for me that Oswald either didn't do it, or if he did, he didn't act alone. So that's the way I approach it. I'm looking for data. I'm looking for evidence. And sometimes the you know, when someone has spent 10 years writing a 658-page book, that's not going to come across on the air. You just don't have time to drill down. So for the listener, they're sitting back and saying, well, you know, where's the evidence? Well, you got to read the book. You know, it's in the appendix. They've reprinted the documents in there. You don't have time to, you know, to get that out on the radio. So it's important for people who are listening to understand that they're not getting the full story. You know, if someone's dedicated 10 years of their life and they've put this book together, they're going to have to go the extra mile and read the book or do a little research on their own, aside from just deciding based upon what they hear on the radio show.
Do you find it a big difference between your audiences on Coast to Coast as it is to your conspiracy show?
Well, Coast obviously is a much bigger platform. You know, millions of people versus the conspiracy show with my U.S. affiliates, you know, maybe hundreds of thousands. So it's a much bigger platform. But the late night audiences are the best audiences in radio because you have their undivided attention.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Attention, for the most part, and I just find that they're incredibly thoughtful and passionate audience. You can't do this kind of radio, you know, as far as I can tell, you know, during the drive home or during the morning. People's, you know, they're on the road, they're in and out of their cars in 15 minutes. Late night radio, you can do long form, in-depth interviews, and you know, in my mind's eye, I see that listener. Maybe they're sitting in a soft chair in a living room with the lights down, and they're just listening. That's it. They're not watching TV. They're not trying to get dinner for the kids. They're yours for those 2 hours, and that's the beauty of late night radio.
Now, with the internet, have you found that there's a lot more evidence in things like, you know, ghost research as well as cryptozoology and stuff like that? How come there isn't more evidence is what I should say.
How come there isn't more evidence for the existence of ghosts?
Yeah, or even Bigfoot and stuff like that. Everybody has a cell phone now. Everybody can take a picture, snapshot, or a film real easy. And why isn't there more evidence coming forward?
Well, you're right. I mean, that's a great question, and it's one I ask myself as well. You know, where is the body? Habeas corpus when it comes to Bigfoot, and yet we're told, well, there's one theory that these are they're not purely physical beings. They're perhaps interdimensional beings. You know, that's one explanation that's offered up. I can't say that I necessarily buy into that. I would certainly, you know, a large part of me wants Bigfoot to exist. But like you, Alan, I'm waiting for some definitive evidence. And I would think that by now, someone would have produced, a body. However, you know, when was the last time someone discovered a dead grizzly bear in the woods or a dead mountain lion? Now, occasionally one is what we, you know, they're hunted and shot. We've seen stuffed grizzly bears and so forth, but it's not like you're walking through the woods and you just see one, you know, lying there dead on the ground. What happens to those? You know, they're quickly consumed, I suppose, by other scavengers and so forth and predators. One would think that at some point a big logging truck is going to collide with a Bigfoot somewhere in the Pacific Northwest, and, you know, we can finally put this thing to rest. But until that happens, all we have are an endless supply of plaster casts of footprints and fuzzy photographs.
Do you ever watch any of the television shows on ghosts or ghost hunters or any of that sort of stuff?
Yes, I have. I've seen enough of them. They all sort of play out the same way. So in some respects, if you've seen one, you've seen them all.
Yeah.
But, I'm certainly not convinced on the basis of those reality TV shows in the existence of ghosts. I do find, however, some of the EVPs, quite fascinating, electric voice phenomena. And some of the photographs that I've seen online are quite remarkable. However, because of things like, you know, Photoshop and other technology, photographic evidence is becoming less and less reliable. So am I convinced? No, I'm not 100% convinced, but it's again, I'm conflicted by it as well. The whole idea of ghosts, it doesn't square with my faith. So that's, you know, that's always a challenge for me, to get beyond that. However, everyone loves a good ghost story, and I'm no different in that regard. And, you know, I love talking about ghosts on the radio. I love having ghost experts and ghost hunters, and that's not, you know, just because I have some issue with it from a religious standpoint and difficulty believing it in 100%. It's not going to dissuade me from talking about it.
Well, I will say that. For sure, listening to Coast, when I hear you or Ian Punnett on, I don't notice a suggestive taint toward religion. Like, I would never know you had a lot of faith, and that would make you doubt, perhaps, ghosts or question them more, or it doesn't fit. But I do notice it on some of the other hosts. It seems to tend to be that way.
I'll put it on the table. I will mention it when I think it's necessary, so that people understand that I do have a bias. Even if it doesn't necessarily come out, it's important for people to know. Okay, this is who I am. This is what I believe. However, now you tell me your story.
Right.
That's how I try and approach it.
Yeah, and I think that's great. Now, so how does that affect your UFO and your belief in aliens and that whole aspect of this? Because this is a very big subject in the paranormal field right now.
Well, here's an area that can get you taken off the Christmas card list really quickly because this field is so divisive, as you well know.
Yeah.
Much as, you know, the JFK community, if I can use that term, very divisive, and Bigfoot, and every group has their, you know, their schisms and so forth. But when it comes to UFOs, and I have stated this repeatedly, again, this is my bias, and it's not simply informed by necessarily a religious point of view. There's also some based on what I think is some common sense and so forth, but I do believe that we are alone in the physical universe. I think we are unique. But having said that, I do believe that what people are experiencing when they see a UFO or have an encounter or a communication with some being, I think it's real. The question is, what is it they're experiencing? And what or who is piloting these crafts? And so rather than calling them extraterrestrials, I refer to them as interdimensionals. And whether we're talking about whether they are from the angelic realm, whether they are angels or demons or what have you, I mean, that's the way I, from a personal standpoint, I approach the whole UFO ET issue. Because then, you see, I think then it fits the biblical narrative. If we're talking about extraterrestrials, it doesn't work for me. So if we're talking about interdimensionals, then it dovetails quite nicely with the Bible.
I'm sort of okay. Can you explain that a little bit more? What do you mean by a difference in your opinion of interdimensional as compared to extraterrestrial?
Well, if it's an extraterrestrial civilization, we're talking about beings that exist in on our plane of existence. They are from perhaps a distant galaxy. They've traveled from a different star system to get to our Earth. So that's the extraterrestrial. Interdimensional, theoretical physicists, I think they're now talking about at least 11 or 12 hyperdimensions that exist virtually right in front of our nose. And, you know, theoretical physicists, I don't believe, speculate on what might inhabit these dimensions, if anything. But for me, you know, I would speculate that some of these dimensions are inhabited. And what we're experiencing when we see a flying saucer or a so-called extraterrestrial might be an interdimensional. So it doesn't exist on our plane of existence. It's in another dimension. And, you know, when you read the Bible, it talks about, not in so many words, but it strongly hints at the existence of other dimensions. And, I do believe in an angelic realm. I believe in an unseen world. And so that's what I think we're really experiencing with UFOs and ETs. It explains a lot because, you know, people will talk about UFOs seemingly sort of flitting in and out of existence. It's there, then it's not. And it also explains how they might be able to, it's a better explanation for me than the idea that they have traveled thousands and thousands and thousands of light years to get here.
I just wonder about that. I just it makes me and one thing that I question quite often is it seems like someone comes out with an idea. You know, I was abducted by an alien, and one of the last ones we talked to, he was probed by the mantis, and now I've heard 20 or 30 stories that are all similar now. Mm-hmm. It's the same, and it's the same description. Everybody uses the mantis. It becomes the same. And I don't know if it's something we're suggesting to ourselves, or is it something that's really happening?
Well, it's, you make a great point, Al, because if you go back to the Betty and Barney Hill alien abduction, which of course is the first sort of highly publicized incident in the 1960s, and at that time in the pop culture, we were sort of being inundated with these images of grays and so forth. And so, you know, that became sort of the thing, right? That's what everyone was experiencing. And as you say now, it's the mantis. Before Betty and Barney Hill, people were talking about the Venusians, you know, these entities from Venus and so forth.
Right.
So it is interesting how these experiences appear to be, by and large, influenced by what's happening in pop culture.
And linking to what you guys were just talking about, the kind of that power of suggestion and how when somebody says, like for example, when we spoke to that individual and he said, well, I've been probed by the mantis and mentioned little grey ones, and suddenly you hear more and more accounts of the same thing. That power of suggestion is, as we know, is huge. So in terms of spirit communication, Richard, what's your belief around that? Because there is so many different theories and there are so many shows about it and there's so many mediums who claim to be able to talk to spirits. What's your views?
Well, again, conflicted. However, my understanding in the Christian tradition, and certainly in the Catholic tradition, in the Greek Orthodox or the Orthodox Christian tradition, there is something called communion with the saints. And so for me, that opens the door to the possibility that there could be communication with people that have passed on. But I've heard contrary opinions from Catholics and Orthodox Christians on that point. So for me, I'm kind of struggling with it. If we can commune with the saints, and these are you know, people that have passed on, why can't we commune with the spirits of dead relatives and so forth? But also I'm wary that, you know, there is a possibility that there could be a deception here and that we're not necessarily talking to, you know, great Aunt Ruth. We are being deceived by some, you know, low energy or low entity, whether you want to call it a demon, or sometimes people just refer to the level of energy, a lower energy entity. So that we're not actually talking to who we think we're communing with. It's some other lower dimensional being.
And certainly whilst living in Cyprus, that was, very much unsaid kind of theory, because you've got the Greek Orthodox Church, but mediumship is classed as magic, and it's an illegal act in Cyprus.
Is that right? So, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so it's mediums get arrested on a fairly regular basis there. And so now many people will kind of fly out from the UK and they'll do a set for holidaymakers in clubs and bars and things and fly back again so that they don't get the authorities. And whilst the Cypriots are fairly tolerant, if as long as it is not overt and it's not kind of in their faces, people are still known, even last year, were arrested for mediumship. So that's a huge contradiction already with kind of that conversation with and connection with the saints, and would fit very well into that whole theory of we're connecting with the wrong entity as opposed to those who we think we are.
Right. Well, I certainly would sort of categorize myself as a walking contradiction, and that's probably what, you know, that's not probably, that's definitely why I am so conflicted, because I'm certainly no biblical scholar, so I struggle with my faith and I struggle with what I talk about on the air, and I'm just kind of scrabbling around in the dark like a lot of people looking for truth, certainly never claiming to find it or owning it, but I'm Marshall McLuhan, the great media scientist from Canada, used the term organizing ignorance for discovery. And I think that's sort of what I'm about. I don't have a lot of answers. I only have questions. And I'm not getting any closer necessarily after 20 years in radio. I just have more questions.
And I think that's it's so true. I mean, as a medium, I will say to people, when I used to be on stage, I would go on stage and I would say, I haven't a clue how I do this. I don't know, but I know things about people that I wouldn't or shouldn't know. So how I know those things, where that fits into religion and our beliefs, I have no idea. And you'd get this kind of unnerved, so sometimes chuckling from the audience. But it's just about being real about it. There is no definitive proof. I have no proof to offer as to why and how I get this information. I have a whole set of theories. Sometimes they're more, I lean more one way than another because of the basis of the information. But generally, it's really hard to decipher how and why I'm able to do the things that I can do.
So that's my journey as well. I constantly find myself trying to ride at least two horses at the same time.
So what's your belief, Richard, in terms of what happens after we die? Once you die?
Well, I certainly believe in a continuation of consciousness and personality. My current spiritual journey leads me to believe that there will be ultimately a judgment, and hopefully a room for me in God's mansion. I'm constantly challenged by, for example, I have a lot of people on my programs talking about reincarnation and past life regression therapy, and I find that evidence, and I've witnessed a number of regressions. I've had them on performed live on the radio with a registered regression therapist and a client or a subject who goes under hypnosis, and I have seen and heard some amazing things that absolutely and utterly confound me, that again challenge my faith. So I'd have to say I'm open to it, but again skeptical of reincarnation. That is my current spiritual journey is I believe in everlasting life and in judgment.
Pretty amazing. When you're doing the show now, the conspiracy show runs 5 days a week, doesn't it?
No, the conspiracy show is Sunday nights here in Toronto, and then it is carried in delay on about 40 affiliates across North America. So some of those affiliates might carry the show the following Wednesday or Thursday or Saturday or what have you. So it's not live on the affiliate stations, but it's 1 2-hour show a week. And then my podcast, I have a podcast, Conspiracy Unlimited, and that drops 3 days a week, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday.
Great. How often are you doing the Coast to Coast now? It seems like weekends.
Twice a month, typically, sometimes 3 days a week, 3 days a month. So this month, it'll be December 21st and 22nd, which is a Friday and a Saturday. It can be a Friday, it can be a Saturday, it can be a Sunday.
Wow. And who are your biggest influences?
My biggest influences as a broadcaster?
Yeah, as a broadcaster.
Is that what you mean? Let me see. I try to do my own thing, but I can't help but be inspired by certain individuals. Art Bell certainly was a remarkable broadcaster, and it had nothing to do with the content. It was just the whole presentation style. Art was one of those few people that you could sit and listen to. As far as I was concerned, you could sit and listen to him read from the phone directory. He just had such a great voice, such a great cadence and rhythm and delivery and all of that. So Art Bell, I think for many of us in this whole alternative arena, would have to cite as an influence. Let's see. Aside from that, oh dear. There was a gentleman on CBC Radio years ago. His name was Arthur Black, and he had a program called Basic Black. And I loved his humor, very self-deprecating, and I try to be that way. Not necessarily, you know, copying Arthur Black, but I think it is, upon reflection, somewhat similar. And I like to take the Mickey out of myself. You can't take yourself too seriously.
Right. Yeah. So what do you got planned next? You going to keep running with the shows and
just keep, you know, churning it out? I have a lot of content and a lot of time to fill, and continue to do Coast to Coast into 2019. My 2019 will mark my fifth year of doing Coast, sort of as a semi-regular guest host, the Conspiracy Show. Next year will be the 10th anniversary of that particular show on Zoomer Radio in Toronto, although I've been on the air pretty much uninterrupted in Toronto for 20 years, give or take. And the podcast, I'm a fairly recent arrival to podcasting. I'm enjoying that. I can do that from home. I can take my mixer on the road with me and do it from a hotel room. So I'm enjoying podcasting. And that's growing by leaps and bounds, Conspiracy Unlimited. As long as I can work my mouth, I'll just keep going and going and going, I guess.
As long as you can keep talking.
Wow. That's it.
Okay, and the website or your contact information for the guests, if they want to get a hold of you, they don't know how.
They can go through the website strangeplanet.ca, strangeplanet.ca, and that's kind of the landing page, and all the different projects are there. The Conspiracy Show, Conspiracy Unlimited, and there's a contact page there. They can reach me through the website.
Well, it's been a great conversation, and I really appreciate you taking the time to come on. Thank you very much, Richard Serrett.
Well, thanks for inviting me, Al and Julie. A great pleasure.
To find out more about our show, guests, or to listen to past shows from our archive, please go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.